This is Jay Horowitz for the special edition of Amazing Mets Conversations with Mike Breen, Hall of Famer, longtime Knicks, play-by-play man at MSG, and over 20 years, Mike, the lead play-by-play guy in ESPN. And most of all, a dedicated Net fan. But my memory's getting bad in my old age. I remember I got a call from you in 2015. You were trying to make a playoff game, and you couldn't make it. Is that true, or am I losing my mind? It was one of the playoff games in Chicago.
No, I remember, and it was, I mean, it was the great series against the Cubs. So you helped me out because we Met fans stick together, and it was important for me to get to that game and cheer on my team.
You try to match up, make him out to your travel to the Met game in the spring to get to a winning.
Yeah, it's hard. It's interesting. One of the things the NBA schedule comes out, and especially the Knicks schedule, is I try and see when I'm on the road. Clearly, once April starts, and hopefully in the playoffs, if the Mets are in the same city as I'm in. And during the playoffs, too, when my playoff schedule comes out, and I've had, all right, I'm going to be in San Francisco here for the Warriors, or Denver here for the Nuggets, or in L.A., I'm hoping at some point that's when the Mets are on the road and I get to see games. I love going on the road. There's nothing better than Citi Field, but I love going on the road and cheering for our team.
We have a mutual friend, I don't know if you know. 1988, I hired this young man as an intern, Mr. David Fried. And always been, you know, I don't want to, you know, get him in trouble. He says all of your success is because of him. I mean, is that true or not true?
Yes, I would have zero success if I by my side. I'm to admit that.
He's really a great kid. I mean, really, he's really made a nice career for himself with all the stuff he's doing.
Here's the problem, Jay. He has... that he's become, in my estimation, the premier basketball statistician in all of broadcasting. Problem is, the ego is just out of control. Like, he's become a diva. It's troubling. We've tried to talk to him, but I think we're well beyond any chance of having him change.
Last week, they had a bobblehead on his birthday. I don't know if you caught that everything.
Oh, of course. Of course I caught that. Now, I don't know if you remember, when we first interactions we really started having when I was producing a sports talk show, and this was before WFAN. I was producing first Jack Spector and then Dave Sims' sports talk show, and there wasn't many sports talk shows on the air anywhere. And I would have to call you and ask you, any chance we can get one of the guys to come on with Dave or one of the guys to come on with Jack? And this was...
I'll tell you, yes, right. I did say yes, right?
Sometimes yes, sometimes no, but it was unheard of in getting guests to come on sports talk radio. So it was very interesting in those days trying to convince or ask PR directors or players if there's any chance we can get a player. We just need them for 5 or 10 minutes back in the day, and now it's like an everyday thing in life.
It's great. It's great. The same Mr. Free told me that you were in attendance when Carlos Beltran took the third strike in 06.
Yes, that was the ultimate high to low. This catch was one of the most thrilling moments as a Met fan. It was incredible. And then just because Beltran was such a great player and, you know, you had these expectations. But that's part, you know, Jay, that's part of being a fan. And when you have the success, it makes the success so much more worth it because you've experienced the lows. You've experienced the disappointments. So when your team finally reaches the promised land or has a special moment, to me, that's always what's made it so great. And that's why the loyalty is such an important part of rooting for a team.
How did you first get there? You're from Long Island, Mike. How did you first get started being in Mets training? Yankees, Mets, how did you first started?
He was a New York Giants fan. That was his team. And he couldn't root for the Dodgers and he couldn't root for the Yankees. So when the Giants left, he just couldn't root for those two teams. So he had to find another team. And when the Mets came into existence, he adopted the Mets as his club. And because of that, whatever my dad rooted for, that's who I grew up watching and rooting for. And I have a picture. I should send it to you sometime. Not that you'd be interested in it. But I have a picture of a Met uniform that I wore every single day one summer. I mean, every day. Just a top.
Did you wash it?
No. Well, my mother made me every once in a while wash it, but I never wanted it. I wanted every day to wear it. And it was a number 3. I just fell in love with Bud Harrelson when I was a kid. I played shortstop in, you know, Pee Wee League and Little League, and Bud Harrelson was my guy. So I wore that. I wore that jersey every single day one summer.
And unfortunately, Buddy's struggling with Alzheimer's now. You know, it's he's at a home. He's still the only guy to have a ring from 69 in 86. Mike, when did you first start getting into it? You were born in 61, right? So when was your first, you know, game you remember going to?
I think I was about 7 years old. My dad took me. And, you know, you've heard all the various people say when you walk into the ballpark, of course, at Shea Stadium, and you see all that green, it's a moment that you never forget. And because, you know, they were my team and I finally got to see them live in person, that becomes a lifelong passion. And you just, you know, you adopt certain players like I did with Bud, and then you grow. Like I've had a favorite Met pretty much every era. You know, Bud was when I was a kid, I loved Bud, and I loved Tom Seaver. I mean, anybody who ever was a Met fan back then just loved Tom Seaver. And then I became a huge Mike Piazza fan as well. Was a big Mike Piazza fan. And then David Wright was my favorite player. So every era, you find somebody that you think epitomizes what a Met should be. And those guys were like that. The guy now, from my favorite player, is Brandon Nimmo.
Yeah.
He's what a Met should be. And it's been fun. You know, it was fun when I was 7 years old. I'm 62 now. I still love the Mets. When I don't go to the games, I watch them on TV almost every night. My wife, Jay, is as big a Met fan as I am. It's just become a part of our lives.
I'm sure you've seen a picture. Were you at a game recently? I guess somebody was standing up in front of you. And you know, you had a great look on your face, you know.
All right, so he's there, he's sitting next to a Yankee fan, and the two of them are they're having their share of drinks during the course of the game. And at first, most of the section, we found him mildly amusing because he was dancing and always looking around. But by the seventh, it's enough already. It was a close game. It was a big game, and he just wouldn't sit down. And some of the people are yelling at him to sit down. We just got a little irritated by him by the end, but that's all experience.
Hey, listen, I'm going to do you a big favor. I don't know if you know about it. I went to Gary Cohen the other day. He's going to take off a game August 5th because I've heard your dream is to announce one Met game. So I got to work that out with Gary. He's going to be off. It's going to be you, Roddy, and Keith. We'll do the game. Is that good by you?
Oh, my goodness. That's a bucket for me to do a Met game. But, I've had thoughts about doing one before. But the last thing I want to do is I remember being a Marv Albert. And to me, when Marv would miss a game, me to be a backup and do the game, that was the biggest thing in life. So for Gary's backup, any chance backup to take. I'd love to do it sometime, and maybe that can happen. But I want to make sure I don't take anybody's opportunity to be a backup to the great Gary Cohen.
Boy, we're blessed to have great announcers for Howie Rose and the two young guys. We had Keith and Pat McCarthy and, you know, Keith and Robbie. It's good. Yeah, it's a good thing.
Well, you look at Jay. So we now have Gary, Keith, and Rye. I mean, it's just the greatest booth. And when I first came in, you had Bob Murphy and Lindsey Nelson and Ralph Kiner. Like, it just, we've been so blessed all these years. And that's a big part of being a fan of a team. The announcers become your family members. Clearly now I'm wonderful that I'm friends with Gary. We become great friends. Well, I know Keith. Because you feel they're your family. Bob Murphy and Lindsey Nelson and Ralph Kiner, they put like, that's part of me wanting to become a broadcaster because I admired them so much and they seemed to be having such a wonderful time together and doing their job. That had an impact on me as a kid in terms of making a decision when to broadcast.
They're all great guys. I mean, I work with everyone except Lindsey. I started at A&E and Lindsey left the year before. So, Bob and Ralph, the great people, and Howie Rose continued to dish it. Like, I started listening to you. I was a big Imus fan. I loved Imus every day. religiously listen to. And he knew I didn't sleep, okay? So he would call me up. When he went on 6 o'clock, right? He would call me up at 10 after 6 and say, I heard one of your others is out and drunk at bar last night. And I was not alive with Charles McCord and Bernie. And he would put me on a spot. And, he knew, it was crazy tired. I remember you, did you at point you had a little struggle with some of the stuff and parts in your relationship you had to adjust his type of adapting and everything?
Well, it was different than anything I'd ever done. I was always doing just serious sportscasts. And when I first got hired to work with him, he didn't want that. He wanted comedy. And I never did comedy before. So it took me a while to realize that, okay, it's okay to do this stuff because it's all that's fun. And I learned a lot from the crew. Charles McCord, Art McBurk, who we tragically lost last year, just such a wonderful talent. And I think because you had to kind of think on top of your head with that show, because it was rapid fire, that actually helped me as a play-by-play announcer, because you have to deal with whatever happens in the game. You never know what's going to happen. That was this, every time you walked into that studio, I had no idea what was going to happen. And he loved you, Jay. I mean, he's left him poke fun, but he loved you.
He used to call me, he knew I was up, and put me on air. Jay, he said, I miss money here. I saw your owner down in Bourbon Street. And oh my God. But I didn't miss a beat.
No, you were great with him. He tried to put you on the spot, but you handled him beautifully.
No, it was great. Mike, how is it now with basketball? You're off for a couple of months. Is it with ESPN and the MS3? The pace is back and forth all year long, so there's really no rest for you.
Yeah, you know this from all the years you did the job. The travel is what wears you down. So many flights, so many hotel rooms. And listen, I love the job. I've been doing NBA basketball for over 30 years, and I still love it as much as I did the first year. But every year the travel gets a little harder. So for me, when the season's over, even though I could probably do some other sports and maybe do it with, I need that time during the summer to be with my feet, to recharge batteries, and of course to watch my Mets. So it's a great time of year. I hate when the season ends because I love the biggest games, but it's also a nice time to just relax and enjoy the summer.
Like, what's your biggest bang? Is your one, two of your all-time bank calls?
Oh, I don't know if there's one in particular. The one that gets a lot of play is the Ray Allen shot when Miami was able to win game 6 and then wound up winning game 7, because that one decided a championship. If Ray Allen misses that shot in game 6, Spurs win the title. There's no championship for the Heat that year. So it was one of those that one single shot decided who wins a title or who comes up short.
Mike, your Knicks had a great year this year, and relevant, complete crowd pleasing, back page in the papers. Is it, do you feel that you're cycling building with the team for next year?
The key was signing Jalen Brunson. This young man, he was built to play in New York. You know as well as anybody, he can survive in New York, and certain they can shrink under the intense scrutiny that comes to play in New York. And Jalen Brunson, as a player, can handle it, emotionally can handle it. And now I think, he's got a chance to be somebody really special. He had a great year this year. And other players will want to come play with him. And I think that's an important part of his presence now with the Knicks.
He's probably one of the great free agent signings of any of the sports, of any of the teams in New York. The way, he played great under the pressure and,
Oh, yeah. And the thing is, when he was signed, there were a lot of people said, wow, they overpaid for him.
Right, I remember that.
Wrong. But, as a member of the media, sometimes we make right calls and sometimes we are so wrong. You've seen that in your career. And a lot of people were wrong. They knew he was a solid player, but they realized once he moved away from Luka Doncic, who was the dominant player there, and rightfully so, you could see what a talent that Jalen Brunson is.
Mike, have you ever seen Clyde Frazier work the same clothes twice in 2 games in a row?
No, never. Now, he has a couple of suits that he brings back once a year. But, We go on the road sometimes and we want a light pack, so we might wear the same blue suit a couple of times with a different tie. That is a fashion no-no with Clyde. And, you know, he can...
He can go whole year without wearing the same clothes.
He doesn't wear the same suit. The one suit that he might wear more than once in a season is the... And he does it because people love it and people want to see it. And the beauty, Jay, is sometimes we'll be standing on the court doing our open for the telecast, and you watch the opposing players, they'll be on the layup line, and they keep looking over. Holy mackerel, I've never seen him. Because a lot of the players are fashion conscious, and they see what Clyde wears and how he can pull it off. It's unbelievable. If I put a suit like that on, people would be laughing at me. With Clyde, he looks majestic.
Hearing you talk through the years, I hear he's very good with kids in autographs. He doesn't big league anybody. I mean, he's that kind of a guy.
He has embraced who he is, because whether any star has ever played in New York, he understands what he means to the fans. He understands that he's got a special place in the fans' hearts, and he loves now his interaction with them. Sometimes it's father explaining to his son how good this guy was a player, because there are a lot of kids who want his autograph. They only know him as a broadcaster. They don't know what a great player he was. And then, you know, he shows them his championship rings, or he points up to his retired jersey. He's just wonderful with who he is. And you experienced that too with somebody like David Wright. They realize what they mean to the fan base, and they go out and
said, Mike, as good a player, David, as I always tell people, he's 100% better person. Never turned away an autograph. Community Foundation, 22 years old. I mean, he got it, you know. I mean, I've been fortunate, blessed with one of those guys, you know, with Johnny Frank, with Al Leiter, and, you know, through the years. Wait, let me see. What's in the blood at Fordham? You, Michael Kay, Spiro Adidas, Bob Popper, and Jack Curry. I mean, I'm not going to let people out. How do you explain that?
Yeah, there's this guy's work. Reno Ryan, Jack Curry. You know, it all started back with Vince Scully. And when Vince Scully is the gold standard at your university, when you join the radio station at Fordham, you feel an obligation to uphold, and never reach the Vince Scully, but to uphold the professional standard. And I think
he got to Vince Scully a couple of years ago, right?
Yes.
Got that award.
I mean, for somebody who's a Fordham grad who does what I do for a living, there is no higher honor. And the radio station to Fordham, what's so wonderful is it really groomed you to be a broadcaster. And you got a lot of on-air experience while you were at Fordham. So when you got out of college, you felt like, okay, I can do this. You had the confidence going into your first job that I can do this because you put the time in while you were a student there.
Hey, Mike, listen, I appreciate your time. And I will tell Mr. Freed that he gets a little bit of the credit. I mean, I'm really happy. I mean, he's all over the place. The guy never rests. I mean, I used to be a workaholic, and Dave is bouncing around with Ian Eagle, with you, with everybody. What a career. And his son is in the business there, too.
There's so many people in my business. You know, we're on camera. We're the voices people hear. But there's so many people in the production truck, or Dave sitting next to me as a statistician, that you're only as good as the people that you work with. And, you know, I always say that, like, basketball is a great team sport. Well, broadcasting basketball is a team sport, and you need that support staff, and you need the people around you to make it. Dave is one that makes it.
Our TV guys love him. And, you know, Johnny Frank used to tell me, you know, I never took myself seriously, Mike. Always a victim of practical jokes, never battered it out. He used to say, if the guys don't like you, they won't screw with you. So the same thing with Dave. I mean,
yes,
all our guys grew with him a little bit, and they love him to death. But again,
and by the way, Jay, congratulations on your going.
Well,
that's all. Nobody deserves it more. And
Mike,
I watched the ceremony on TV because I was on the road doing a game. I wanted to be there because I would have been the first one standing up giving you standing ovation.
Well, Mike, I appreciate your loyalty to the Mets, and maybe we'll in the next coming year we'll get a World Championship for Knicks and World Championship for the Mets. That would be great for Manoa.
Nothing would be better than that, Jay.